It is Friday, April 10th. Let's talk PlayStation. So it goes without saying, but this has been a pretty crazy week. We have a ton to go over, so let's get right into it with our PlayStation Plus reminder. The April games that are currently available, Uncharted 4 and Dirt Rally 2.0, you have plenty of time to grab these games or add them to your library. Also, Final Fantasy VII Remake is finally available. We have been waiting since E3 2015 for this one, during Sony's conference where they had that crazy reveal, that awesome reaction. It's nice that we finally have it. I hope you're thoroughly enjoying it if you are playing it today. I mean, we are all home, so just try to enjoy yourself. But of course, the big news this past week was on Tuesday. The DualSense, Sony randomly dropped the PS5's official controller on the PlayStation blog. We know what it looks like. We got some new details. If you didn't see on Tuesday, we did a recap and impressions. Most of you probably caught that video. But we covered up most of the details there. And ironically, we knew most of the features of this controller from the Wired article, but it's still nice to know what it looks like. And that's kind of the aspect that I wanted to start off with, was on my channel's community tab, I sent out a poll asking, do you love the design? Do you hate it? Are you indifferent? And keep in mind, this is a PlayStation channel, so there's inherent bias here, although it's also worth noting that when you post on the community tab, that gets sent out to non-subscribers as well. So if anybody's interacted with my videos before, they've likely also seen this poll and probably participated. But the results are in after 39,000 votes, which is crazy, but 66% love it. 8% say they hate it, 27% I'm indifferent. Now, I'm really surprised that I'm indifferent and I hate it isn't reversed a little bit, if only because this is not a radical departure for PlayStation design language when it comes to a controller, but certainly it is a lot different from the outgoing DualShock 4. I mean, there are a lot of changes to where I'm seeing a lot of people be pretty vocal about disliking this controller, so I am surprised. Although, keep in mind, when somebody doesn't like something, they're usually more vocal about it. But having no strong opinion one way or the other, being I'm indifferent, I'm surprised that that was at 27%. Just some interesting data to look over and think about. But the big concern a lot of people are sharing is, does it have a headphone jack? That's the problem with the two product shots they showed us. We really only have two angles of this thing, so people are wondering if it has this or if it has that. Well, for the headphone jack at least, Sony's product manager on Twitter did respond stating that it does have a headphone jack, so keep that in mind. If that's something that you use all the time in your DualShock 4, it is still present here on the DualSense. Now, we also have a lot of developer reactions to the DualSense, which, keep in mind, Sony mentioned in that blog post that they're finally sending out the finalized version of this controller to developers so they can finally utilize every aspect of it and they know what they have to work with, which is great, but we are getting a lot of developer reactions, and unsurprisingly, they all love it or really enjoy it. But an interesting tweet from Pete Hines was, probably showcases how this controller is going to feel for most people, where somebody asked him, you know, how does it feel compared to the PS4 controller? He states, you sort of immediately forget about a PS4 controller. I went back and forth between them, and you immediately just want to use the PS5. What I think this is most likened to, which I think most people probably agree with the sentiment, but it's like from PS3 to PS4, where I think a lot of people, I can't speak for everybody, but a lot of people, once they went back to a DualShock 3 or 6-axis, they immediately felt like that controller was cheap, plasticky, too light, didn't feel premium. Everybody loved the DualShock 4. They thought it was a great jump from PS3 to PS4. And I'm thinking that might be in the same veins here. Now, keep in mind, it looks a lot like, at least in terms of the shape and size, like a 360 and an X1 controller. Now, I don't know about you, but they're very comfortable controllers. They really are. And I think that's kind of the form factor that Sony's going for, at least when you're holding it. And that's, I'm all for that. But back to what I was saying before, people are wondering what it does and doesn't have based on these two angles. And people are also wondering, does it have back buttons? Because we didn't see the back of the controller, so there could still be something back there. Well, all right, so here's some more tweets from Pete Hine where somebody asked about the back buttons. He first ironically said, there is one, in reference to what's on the back of the controller. And then when they clarified, are there back buttons, he said, I'm not going to go into detail. It's not my controller. I was just providing some context having used it. And I think that it's pretty great and I'm excited about it. This is spurring people to still think that there is back buttons back there. So here's the problem. Developers are still very much under NDA. They can share opinions, but they can't confirm nor deny aspects of the controller that are not publicly available just yet. Now, this doesn't mean it has back buttons. In fact, when people say, oh, we haven't seen the back of it yet, I think it's kind of silly because you're not going to get a product shot of the back of the controller. I mean, in fact, go to Google and look up a DualShock 4, look up an Xbox One controller, look up a lot of controllers. And official product images, you're hard-pressed to find the back of it. It's just, why would they do that, right? So I'm going to venture a guess that there's none back there. And this goes same for people asking or wondering if the buttons light up because they're translucent like a Vita, or they appear translucent like a Vita. So maybe the buttons light up. The face plates, it looks like it has face plates, so you can swap them out for different colors. What about the PlayStation button? It looks like that lights up. Well, let's just put it this way. If they were willing to tell us 6 months ago that it's USB-C, has adaptive triggers, haptic feedback, that it's rechargeable still, I think people are just getting a little carried away here. Like, chill. This is it. This is the controller. It doesn't have anything crazy. There's no unknown features about it. This is what it looks like. There's nothing to find out, really, in all likelihood. Which is actually a good cautionary news story here, just as an FYI. The only color we have officially is white from Sony. So there are a lot of mock-ups. This controller is easily Photoshopped, which is cool. We can see alternate color schemes, which, you know, no doubt this thing's going to get alternate colors down the line when Sony feels comfortable doing that. But we only have white right now. So don't think that the PlayStation face buttons are colored. Don't think that they're going to launch with red or an all-black one right away. This is what we really have, is a white controller with a slightly, you know, navy two-tone to it, which is very reflective, potentially, of what the console will look like, which maybe it'll be white with a, you know, accents of navy somewhere. We don't really know, right? But from Sony, at least, that's what's officially here. In fact, going back to the translucent buttons and the D-pad, one fan on Twitter did say, OMG, looks like a Vita D-pad. They're so excited. Shuhei Yoshida liked that tweet. So nothing crazy, but perhaps it also feels like a Vita D-pad. Because, totally looks like one. That's not really a mystery. But if it feels like one, would be a lot different because it has a more clicky, responsive feel versus what you'd normally see on the controller. So maybe that will be the case. But two other details that if you really look hard enough, you might not have noticed initially at first glance. The first one being around the actual thumbstick, right? So currently on a DualShock 4, first off, it looked a lot like the DualShock 4 sticks, right? I thought they were just the exact ones pulled off it. But really, zooming in a little bit, it's more of a tri-point textured finish, whereas the current one just has no particular design or finish to it, right? It's just kind of textured. But this has more of a tri-point design to it. Don't know what that really does for the controller, but potentially that might have an effect of better grip. Also, the L1 and R1 buttons have no bridge between them and L2 and R2, which every single PlayStation controller has had some kind of plastic trim piece separating those. So just another thing to keep in mind, that now they're pretty much right next to each other for easy, quicker access, depending on how you like to hold the controller. Now, we also have a situation where we're seeing the patent after the product we already know about using it in practice, or at least you would imagine both of these are related somehow. It's not really confirmed. But we know the DualSense has a microphone, and a lot of people are wondering, how well does that really sound when you're holding the controller so far away, you're pressing buttons? How does it handle ambient noise? Well, there is a patent that Sony recently, it was filed not that long ago, but recently surfaced this week, where it explains a microphone array in a controller and how it processes sound in order to exclude certain aspects where it's basically not the voice it's trying to capture and send to the other player, right? So things like all that ambient noise, talking to another person in the room, the button presses from the controller, how far away you are. It's basically trying to tunnel vision just to your voice and trying to process that to make sure that it can exclude all the other stuff, right? Hopefully that works. I would imagine it might not work amazingly well, but it'll probably do much better than you would think, right? But now let's get into kind of the same thing we talked about when the logo reveal came up, right? Or pretty much anything Sony does relating to PlayStation 5, which is the social media engagement. I mean, these are numbers you cannot ignore. And I feel like I'm beating a dead horse here when I bring this stuff up, but this just kind of is a tell-all situation. I've been talking about this for a little bit now. This DualSense announcement garnered 300,000 likes on Twitter, 4.3 million some odd likes on Instagram, probably more at this point, right? This is what I keep saying when I talk about when we talk about sales, right? When we talk about the penetration of these consoles, and that's including Series X, for example, definitely it's the unfortunate reality when I talk about, as great as Series X sounds, they are fighting an uphill battle. They can make that thing as amazing as they possibly could, but there are just certain markets where PlayStation just is the dominant brand, and these numbers are just ridiculous. It honestly is. When Microsoft's doing that well, and they just still aren't even coming close to these numbers, it's pretty indicative of the challenges that they're currently facing. But this ties in with our next news story about Phil Spencer. He was on Podcast Unlocked, I think a little over a week ago. I wanted to include this on LTPS last week, but it was getting too long. We didn't have time to talk about this, but he was on Podcast Unlocked. I love when Phil Spencer does interviews because honestly, he is the most candid dude ever. He's so genuine, so honest. He says things, he'll admit things that you'd never see out of any other PR statement, PR person, any other executive, CEO, from any other game company or publisher, or really just any other industry. It's just kind of insane how openly he talks about things, and that's what I love about him. But he had shared a number of interesting quotes about, you know, how he feels about Series X, their plan moving forward. He feels great about the CPU and GPU. After seeing PS5, that's totally understandable. They're doing a great job there. But he shared a few interesting things I'd like to quote here. He says, "I believe we have a plan that can win. I feel good about the price we're going to be able to get to. I feel good about the price and the performance capabilities that we have for Series X. I feel incredibly strong about the overall package." And that's what's, I'm not going to lie, slightly upsetting to me is that they do have a very compelling product. But look at the social media engagement. This is just the writing's on the wall where they are unfortunately not going to be able to move nearly as many machines, I think. And I know that's so early to say, but boy, I mean, I predicted it at the start of 2020 for our annual predictions video where I said they're both going to look great, but Sony's probably going to take the early lead. And now I'm just thinking that, yeah, I had the right idea going forward. But see, this is what I mentioned when I talk about certain markets, right? And there are situations where Microsoft is going to come back pretty strong. And I think North America is that place. We've never really divulged into the numbers. But again, Japan, it's just a free market for Sony. However many consoles they sell there you go. Europe, they outsell Microsoft 3-1, 4-1, 5-1, depends on the country. But they've got upwards of 40 some odd million, probably more consoles in Europe, whereas Microsoft's sitting at like 10 to 13 million. I don't have those numbers completely on hand. But in North America, it's a different story where they've sold a vast number of consoles. Microsoft has 30 million Xbox Ones in North America versus Sony's around 35 million PS4s. Now, that's a territory Microsoft absolutely has every opportunity in the world to take back. And I think they probably can because this machine does sound absolutely awesome. The love for Series X is everywhere. Just the numbers are not there. And that's the uphill battle that Microsoft is going to have to face with this machine. It'll still be interesting to see moving forward with PS5 because there's still a lot we don't know about the console where this could take a huge U-turn and people don't like it and don't want to buy it. Still possible. But where we're going right now, it doesn't look like anything's changing. Now, moving on to the Silent Hills reboot rumor. This is not over. And this is kind of what I was like saying when Konami flat out denied it. And I'm like, well, can't take their word for it, because if they're doing something, they're not going to just confirm it through a PR statement. That just doesn't happen. They're going to want to announce this thing whenever they're ready to do so, surprise people. Who knows what they want to do? They want to announce it on their terms. Anyway, the rumor is still alive, so insiders are doubling down on this. But actually, before we get to that, let's first start off with this pretty damning evidence from one famous Japanese manga artist. Sudahiro Maru posted on his Instagram two stories where he's at Konami for one, and then another image of like a Silent Hills tombstone, afternoon invitations, hope you'll join in. Take that for what it is. I think that's, kind of tells us everything. I mean, context is very important here. We don't know if he's actually working on a video game per se, but perhaps another section of Konami's business where they are just leveraging the Silent Hill IP, but I think that might be stretching it a bit far. But actually, we can go to Reset Era, where we do have a post where somebody claims they can confirm with 100% that the Silent Hill reboot with Toyama and Ito, that's supposed to be the soft reboot, is definitely coming, and that will be announced in the next few months. This is unrelated to Silent Hills, where Sony's potentially getting involved, but perhaps Sony's getting involved with both projects. Keep in mind, this is like still super muddy. There's some slight conflicting reports, but for the most part, this has been pretty consistent. Anyway, this user was also verified in terms of their information. So we do have that. So yeah, this isn't dying. And I thought that this was more than likely happening when we heard we're in the development community around there. People know that Japan Studio is involved, that Konami's doing this, and that, you know, people know about it. They just don't really talk about it, right? It's probably happening. It's just a matter of waiting to see to what effect this looks like. If it'll be announced on current gen and next gen, you know, combined, if it's if Sony really is as involved as we're hearing that they are, and which would secure either timed exclusivity or full exclusivity. Again, there's a lot of unknowns here. We'll just have to wait and see. All right, now we can take a little breather from all the big news stories for PlayStation Now. Spider-Man is going to be available on the service until July 7th. This is part of Sony's rotating roster of, you know, more premium or more recent PS4 games. And that's also alongside Just Cause 4, which will be on the service, I believe, till October. A little bit longer than the Spider-Man one. But $10 a month, so this is part of their rotating little deal where they're trying to entice more people to try the service alongside all those streamable PS3 games. The PS2 and PS4 games are downloadable. Now, for The Last of Us Part 2's recent delay, no major update, but if you've pre-ordered this on the PlayStation Store, you've probably already been given a refund, or Sony should be contacting you very soon to issue that refund. Basically, you know, it's been pulled and everything, that alongside Iron Man VR, so keep that in mind if you were looking for the digital version and you're wondering why it's disappeared or why you no longer have it. You are getting a refund for that. Naughty Dog's Neil Druckmann also followed up on the game's delay, saying that the game is mostly finished. It's a great game. They have a great game that they have to sit on, but they do have to be fair to fans. Kind of echoing what I was explaining last week, just that there's a lot of variables here where you can't just release it digitally and call it a day. You know, you have to think about the global release. There's certain territories where internet speeds are not that great and they can't really easily download this thing. They can't just release it digitally and then let people that need physical have to avoid spoilers. This game is also very big for Sony, so they're going to want to make sure that this has the widest availability possible. So there was an explanation there. Although on the flip side, there are some leaked clips online of The Last of Us Part 2, some small gameplay clips. Apparently how this footage got out, the person has more that may end up online, but Sony's been pretty vigilant on taking down every source for wherever this footage shows up. So we are now in a kind of a danger zone where be a little bit careful looking at Last of Us stuff. If you're watching something and it looks different, maybe click away from it or something. There is now some footage leaking out, so try to be careful about that. Next up, we have a developer interview that caused a lot of commotion this past week, so much so that the interview has now been pulled from the site, and so we can't really go over everything, but it was a really long interview with like a lot of answers were also very thorough, so we can't really cover everything here, but for the most part, this interview was with a Crytek developer who was asked about the next generation consoles, PS5 versus Series X, and a lot of his answers were very heavily skewed towards PS5 being the better platform. So generally, a lot of the things that he was asked was, you know, which one's easier to develop for. He says PS5 is the easiest console they've ever coded on to reach its peak performance. He answers PS5 is extremely simple and has so many abilities that make the developers so free. He concludes PS5 is the better console than Series X, just flat out. He says very confidently when asked which one's better, PS5 without a moment of hesitation. He says, as a programmer, I see a PS5 is much better, and I don't think you can find a programmer that could name one advantage that Series X has over PS5, which is kind of a little almost hyperbolic here. It's worth noting that this interview was in Farsi, so it was translated, which leaves a lot of room for, you know, errors potentially in terms of trying to interpret what was said. Although I'd argue that this interview was so long and he was pretty consistent with a lot of his answers that I wouldn't completely buy translation getting mixed up here. But it is pretty, it's bizarre how much he was leaning towards PS5. But the thing that I would like to grab out of this interview more than anything else is his explanation at one point for a certain circumstance where he says PlayStation 5 is easy to develop for, easier, and that it's easier to get to the peak performance. In the interview, there was another moment where he explains, in the long game, PS5 might have trouble, whereas Series X will be a situation where once developers get more comfortable, you're going to see better performance out of there. And he even uses 360 and PlayStation 3 as an example. This has always been a fantastic example to explain teraflops, the SDK, why it's so important to understand that you can't easily compare two machines over the other when one on paper is more powerful, because you have so many examples where a game will look and run better on a lesser machine. There's so many variables at play here. Games are incredibly complicated to make, but PS3 and 360, that great example where to utilize cell architecture, it takes a lot of effort. a lot of optimization, a lot of extracting all that use out of the SPUs. That's why first party excelled so well on PlayStation 3, and third parties took a while to really get more performance out of the PlayStation 3, right? But there are certain situations where if a developer leads on one platform and then ports everywhere else, that's where you could have, you know, a differing amount of performance gains and losses depending on the platforms at hand, right? And so while he sounds very unusually skewed towards PlayStation 5 in a manner where it's definitely questionable, what can probably be genuinely taken away from this interview is that PS5 probably, in all likelihood, is the easier machine to work on right now. That's a key principle that Sony's had for PlayStation 4, and even more so on PS5, where they got time to triangle to 1 to 2 months on PS4, and now it's less than a month on PlayStation 5. That's not to say anything bad about what Microsoft's doing. They do have most of the spec sheet on their machine beating PlayStation 5, but I can absolutely believe that Sony's probably built an SDK that is much easier to work with. But that is the advantage of consoles. That's why we see such great results out of what seems like weak boxes compared to a high-spec PC, right? These things can be very heavily optimized, and that's why we see first-party games that are focused on that particular platform really utilize every aspect of it. You're going to see great stuff out of Microsoft's first party, and you're going to see Sony leverage that SSD like crazy and see great things out of them as well. That's just what we're dealing with. The interview being pulled, I mean, I think is kind of obvious, right? Because you can't really say things like that. I mean, he was giving really long-winded answers about which one's better and why this one does one thing vastly better than the other. I prefer this machine. I mean, you can't, as a developer, you can't say stuff like that. That's so NDA breaking. I mean, he probably was, I would imagine, heavily punished for doing something like that. You don't see stuff like that at developers, and there's a reason for that. Now, let's get to Let's Talk Plus, the weekly Let's Talk PlayStation giveaway, where one of you can win a $10 PSN code. I would like to congratulate this viewer right here. I'll be contacting you very soon via email or Twitter. If you would like to win a $10 PSN code, it's very simple. Follow the link down below. Support on this channel a number of ways can gain you an entry, and I'll announce the winner next week because I am trying to pay for your games. Those are some of the news stories that I want to talk about you all. On Tuesday, we had two uploads, right? Our DualSense coverage, recap impressions. Go check that out to get caught up on that if you didn't see. But we also had our regular upload, PS3 leaks and rumors. Much like the PS4 video, we do a deep dive into the early 2000s. Check out all those very early leaks and rumors and grade them to find out what was and wasn't true. This coming Tuesday, not sure what I got for you, but as always, be there 8 a.m. EST like most uploads to see what video pops up. And that is it. That concludes this week's episode of Let's Talk PlayStation. I'm Ryan Panecki. Thank you all so much for talking with me, and I will see you all next Friday.